I was really saddened last night when I learned of the passing of John Feinstein. His career as a columnist and best-selling author of books made him one of the most notable sports writers of his time. He died yesterday at the age of 69. He was a regular sports columnist for the Washington Post, a frequent contributor to a variety of radio programs, with a regular stint on National Public Radio. I probably first interviewed John about 30 years ago, and he was always one of my favorites. He was a great writer, a great speaker, and a lot of fun to talk to. He did join our program often, and it was always a treat. Our final conversation with him was late last fall. We air a portion of that interview now in memoriam.
The history of the Ivy League dates back to 1869 when Princeton played the first college football game against Rutgers. The Ancient Eight by John Feinstein explores Ivy League football today. To play in the NFL, one must maintain the highest academic standards and be a great football player. The rivalries are as intense as are the strict rules, but there is also a genuine purity in the Ivy League, which is something John explores in the new book, The Ancient Eight, College Football's Ivy League and the Game They Play Today. It is a great pleasure to welcome John Feinstein back to the roundtable. Always a pleasure, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. It's good to talk to you again. Thanks.
What number book is this?
50.
My goodness. I think you've been on for most.
Certainly most of the nonfiction. There's 35 nonfiction, 15 fiction, and I think you've had me on for just about all of the nonfiction.
Yep. Well, it's great to have you back. What brought you to this idea of writing about the Ivy League, which has always sort of nagged me as something I didn't quite understand? So I was very pleased to see that you had addressed this so I could learn more about it.
Well, I grew up on Ivy League football, Joe, and in New York City. I used to ride the subway to the tip of Manhattan and go to Columbia games at what was then Baker Field. And Columbia wasn't very good at all, but I enjoyed the games. It was $4 to get in. You could sit on the 40-yard line. And for me, as a kid, it was a lot of fun. And after I left New York to go to college and then on to the Washington Post, I still followed the Ivy League, both football and basketball. And as you know, I did a book years ago on the Army-Navy football rivalry. And I also did a book called The Last Amateurs on Patriot League basketball. And what I discovered in doing those two books is you didn't have to be rich and famous to have a story to tell. I've always believed that. And those two books reinforced that for me. And I was talking to my editor at Hachette about, I guess, a year and a half ago now, 2 years ago now, about what I wanted to do after my book on David Faraday. And I threw out the idea of doing a book on Ivy League football because I've always been fascinated by it. And I knew, as with a Civil War and as with The Last Amateurs, that I'd be dealing with players, kids, who were smart and who had stories to tell. And he loved the idea. He'd read, Brant Rumbel is his name, he had read both those books and he liked them. And he said, yeah, let's do it. And so I did, and it was everything I hoped it could be, Joe. The kids were terrific. I interviewed 82 of them from the 8 schools, and every interview was good. Not because I'm such a good interviewer, but because the kids were bright and funny and had stories to tell and were willing to share. And I enjoyed the project greatly. And the reason for the title was one of the reasons for the book, that in today's world where teams, schools switch leagues all the time and players transfer all the time, I wanted to go to a place where that didn't happen, where players went to school for 4 years and stayed at the schools where they first enrolled as freshmen, and where I know that the Ancient Eight was formed in 1954, and in 2054, it'll still be the Ancient Eight. It'll still be the same 8 schools. They won't realign. They won't leave. They won't bring anybody new in. And I love that idea, that it's sort of a throwback to when I was a kid.
But the glory days are gone, right? I mean, there was a time where you would have 60, 80,000 people watching those games, and now you're lucky if you get 5,000.
Right, except for Harvard-Yale, which will always sell out. But you're right. That was a decision made by the Ivy League presidents back in the 50s, they intentionally undercut, quote unquote, the quality of football. They didn't want to compete for national championships. I remember walking into Harvard Stadium for practice one morning and noticing there were 8 national championship banners, but the last one was in 1919. And no, Joe, I didn't cover that team. But they made a conscious decision that they wanted to make sure they had academic standards. They did not want to have athletic scholarships, although, you know, the kids get money based on their family's income. They get scholarships, but they don't get athletic scholarships. And they said, we're going to play 10 games. Back then it was 9 games, and now it's 10. 10 games a year, 10 weeks in a row, no bye weeks. We will not compete in football in postseason play, which I disagree with. I think they should let the players on the championship team compete in postseason on in the FCS level, which is the second level, right below, you know, Oregon and Notre Dame and all the power schools. But they made that conscious decision to go in that direction. And they think, and I don't disagree, that it succeeded. It's done well for the athletes involved.
As you were spending time with the teams, and you were spending time working on the book, I mean, are there things that just cry out to you of, oh God, I wish this was more the norm?
Well, yes, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do the book, Joe, because I knew it was not the norm. And I wanted to write about athletes and coaches who live in a world that's very different than the SEC or the Big Ten or the ACC. You know, I'm an old guy, Joe. I wish that college football was like it was when I was a kid, but it's not. I mean, you know, realignment has changed things tremendously. NIL, transfer portal. Ohio State, and I'm not putting them down, it's just a fact. Ohio State has a payroll for its players this year of $20 million.
Right.
And there are cases in both football and basketball where a player will stay for another year, which is a good thing, I think, because they know they can make more money playing in college than trying to go to the pros. And I miss those days when, you know, when I was a kid, we'd go down on the field for every game and talk to the players and coaches. And they still do that in the Ivy League. When an Ivy League game ends, fans come down on the field and talk to the players. Many of them are families, of course, but it is a completely different world. I accept the fact that it's never going to change back. That you know, people complain, say NIL should go away. Well, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of NIL. Yeah, a very conservative court, by the way. So they're not going away. Neither is the transfer portal. And it is fairer that if a coach can change jobs and go right to work, why should the player be able to transfer and go right to work at his sport? So I'm not against any of these things, but I miss the old days when it wasn't that way. And I loved being in the Ivy League for an entire season. I interviewed 82 guys, Joe, 82 players, and every one of them was a good interview. And I enjoyed that greatly. And there were some wonderful stories to be told that I told about some of these athletes. And a few of them may play in the NFL. Most of them won't.
I guess I will close by asking a question just about your process of what it takes for you to decide that you're going to spend a season on a particular project, whether it be golf or basketball or, in this case, the Ancient Eight.
Well, it's pretty simple. People ask me that, and my answer is I get an idea in my head, and I say that would be fun, that would be interesting, that would be a good book. And then the question becomes, can I execute it? Can I get the cooperation that I need from the people involved, whatever the case may be? And in the case of the Ancient Eight, I couldn't have gotten more cooperation. I had total access to the games, to being in the locker rooms, to being on the sidelines, to being at pregame meals, whatever it might be. And I enjoyed it greatly. I enjoyed the fact that after they got to know me, because the coaches introduced me to all the players during spring practice, they, you know, accepted me and sort of saw me as part of the furniture during the games. And that's my goal. My goal is to be there. When I wrote A Season on the Brink, Steve Alford, who was the best player on that Indiana team, wrote a book a couple of years later after they won the national championship. Not during my year, unfortunately, but they won the national championship a couple of years later. And Steve wrote a book called, cleverly enough, Playing for Night. And the chapter on his junior year, which was my year in Indiana, was called The Invisible Man. And that was me. And I liked the idea of being invisible or being accepted by the subjects of my books. And during the Ancient Eight, I could not have asked for more.
What is it like this season watching these eight teams play, knowing what you know from last season and knowing that you're not working on it now?
Yeah, it is different. And, I root for all eight teams. I certainly rooted for them when they played non-conference games. And it's very difficult for me to see the losses, and it's fun for me to see the wins because a lot of players are still there, are still playing, that I wrote about. And it is a different experience, though, not being there every week. It's kind of weird waking up on a Saturday morning and knowing I don't have an Ivy League game to go to. I almost have to adapt to that.
John Feinstein is the author of The Ancient Eight, College Football's Ivy League and the Game They Play Today. The book is published by Hachette. John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
Joe, thank you for having me again. I've always enjoyed our talks.
An archival interview with John Feinstein, who died Thursday at the age of 69. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.